Welcome to On Balance. I'm your host, Dr. Rod Berger. I'll be your guide as we explore the stories of today with the personalities impacting tomorrow. Welcome to On Balance.
Well, this is such a treat. You know, as many of you know, I've worked in and around education for a large portion of my career. And I've been very, very fortunate to interview, formally and also off-air meet lots of educators, innovators, people who are really impacting the ecosystem. And you know what? Sometimes, and shame on me and really anybody else in the space, especially in the media side of it, that, you know, there are times when we maybe lose track and we don't profile those that are in the trenches, that are right there with our kids, and that we need to do more of it. And I think some of it is we don't want to interrupt their day anymore. And so we're going to do that today with an incredible educator who, just doing the research, you think, my goodness, I want to go back to sixth grade. I want to have these experiences. Autumn Rivera is currently a sixth grade science teacher at Glenwood Springs Middle School in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, which I am sure is a beautiful part of that state, one of my favorites. She's also an adjunct professor at Colorado Mountain College in the education department. During her more than 17 years as an educator, she's worked with students from elementary to postgraduate levels. She holds both a Bachelor of Arts in Biology and a Master's of Arts in Teaching Secondary Science from Colorado College, and a Master's in Educational Leadership from the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs. She's a member of the Colorado Science Conference Planning Committee and is a president-elect for the Colorado Association of Science Teachers. She's presented at a variety of professional development courses, including the Roaring Fork EdTech Summit and the Colorado Science Conference. She has also won a number of awards. She's the 2022 Colorado Teacher of the Year. She was a finalist for the National Teacher of the Year, Golden Apple Awardee 2022, Excellence in Teaching Awardee in 2023, and she was also the AMLE Educator of the Year in 2023. So hopefully I haven't, you know, I feel like a family member, like Thanksgiving here, Autumn, going through, you know, sort of these proud moments and accomplishments. Look, in my research and reading about you, here's what I love that sort of jumps off of the tape, as they might say, or the film, is there's an honesty, there's a transparency about you and being an educator, and even publicly talking about times where maybe you read the room wrong, or you had a student that didn't exactly resonate with your teaching style just because of a quip here or there, and having them outside of class and asking what's going on, and then finding out that student really, really wants to be there and participate and has, you know, done very well since then. So there's something about that I think that we should honor and talk about. Where do you think that comes from? Because I think we're in a society now, Autumn, where we feel like we have to have the answer. You know, this whole element of whether it's debate or discourse or trying to figure out that new information might change our perspective as we grow and matriculate throughout an educational system and even a professional and personal life, that we're supposed to have an answer. And yet I just love that you're human. I know that sounds so strange to say, but I love that about what I'm reading from you. Has that always been there, the vulnerability?
I think you're exactly right. We're human beings. And so many times in our profession right now, teachers are treated as robots. We want the perfect curriculum in the all handled in the same way and the perfect students. And when you put them all together, you'll get the perfect outcome. Well, that doesn't work when you're dealing with humans, because we all have different situations and different backgrounds. And so humanizing the situation, and not only humanizing my students, but also humanizing myself, I think has been really important. It's something I focus on in teaching. And I love to celebrate when you don't know the answer, because as a scientist, we don't always know the answer, and that's okay. We learn it, we figure it out. And so if you don't know, awesome. Thank you for letting me know. Let's figure it out together. So I think in creating a human classroom that focuses and celebrates each individual student as who they are, we're able to then continue and learn together and celebrate from mistakes and grow from that. And we don't know everything, and that's okay. I think it puts a lot of less pressure on me and less pressure on them to not have to know everything, and that's okay, and we can grow together.
Now, I think we're going to look back maybe in, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, Autumn, when they're going to be a number of books, several books on the bookshelf about what COVID did to the parent-teacher relationship, because it was almost as if we had discovered a new species in the wild or something. You know, you had parents sort of coming out of the woodwork asking questions that seemed pretty common sense based, but almost as if an acknowledgement that they hadn't been there asking those questions before, or at least participating at some level. And, you know, potentially that the teaching force writ large, and this is a very, you know, broad strokes here, you're just sort of used to not as many parents participating in a way that maybe we would draw it up in a perfect world like you sort of laid out there. Talk with me a little bit about in your career, how the evolution of the parent or the caregiver relationship with you has changed over time because of your vulnerability, because as you talk about, look, life is imperfect, science is imperfect, and giving your students enough wiggle room to understand sort of where they are in that larger calculus of what it is to be within science and to ask big questions. How has that changed the relationship with a caregiver over time? And is it sometimes uncomfortable for a parent to say, well, wait a minute, this is very different than math or English, or, you know, where we're sort of, we kind of know what we think we should be talking about here?
Yeah, I love that question. It really has changed. I think about when I first started teaching, I was very traditional classroom, very copy things down from the board, memorize them, take the test, repeat. And that's just how I taught my lessons. And so my communication with parents was very minimal. And it usually was communicating if there was a situation, if there was an issue. Luckily, that's changed. And I think one thing I love about teaching science is I want to push the idea that learning only happens in the four rooms of my classroom. And so when we're talking about science, we're going out in the community. When we're learning about roller coasters and how energy changes, I take them to our amusement park and we ride the roller coasters and we talk to the different people that work there. When we're learning about engineering, we bring in parents who are engineers to talk to our students. And so the idea that learning can only happen in the classroom with the teacher, I really want that idea to change so that we're able to have it be a different situation. And so as much as I can, I focus on bridging that gap between the students and the home and what's happening at home, because it's not just me, it's not just the students, it's not just at home, it's the three of us working together. And when we all work together, amazing things happen. And so that communication happens weekly, where I send home a weekly update of like, here's what we're doing this week, just so parents sort of know. I try to provide a question to ask that parents can ask their kids, because if you've ever been around a middle schooler and you ask them how their day went or what they learned, you will get a one-word answer. And so I try to prompt them with like, here's a question, ask your student this question tonight so that you can at least have some sort of conversation around what's happening in my classroom. And so it's been a really fun way to take science out into the world and let students see, like, there are scientists all around us. There are scientists that look like you and me. It's not just the crazy old white guy in the lab coat, but science is happening all around. And so I'm really helping with that scientific identity and bringing that community in. It's been really fun to be able to do.
You may be a perfect person, an ideal person to ask this question and to get your perspective. So I'll date myself. I'm probably older than you. And, you know, when I think back, there was a lot of, everything was sort of prescriptive. You know, you met with a career counselor and you sort of just went through high school and there was college and these sorts of things. And you still had a hierarchy. Well, that whole world has just been absolutely flattened in so many ways. Last week, I was speaking at a school locally about social entrepreneurship. And these are freshmen through seniors that are thinking about how they want to innovate, big questions that they want to answer and solve. It's just a completely different world. And then if you plug into this, we sort of take it like an equation. We plug in another variable, which is research is showing that Gen Z, if they leave their first job, and many of them do within 5 years, it's not because of some disparity in pay. It's mainly over 50%. It's because the company that they worked for, they don't match with their values. And typically it's around sustainability, climate, environment, purpose over profits, these sorts of things. And that's a long way of saying, I think that the roots of that are really sort of being baked in and realized at even a sixth grade level. I have a fifth grader and I see the questions that are already being asked and the types of projects that he enjoys. And I'm thinking, wow, he's talking like a social entrepreneur. He's talking like those high school students or the other folks that I'm interviewing around the world around innovation and sustainability. And I'm wondering if that's our premise or if we sort of think that may be a loose playbook here, how do we identify the talents and then communicate that as an educator to a student? Because that relationship, you look back at people who have done some remarkable things, they'll talk about that educator that kind of identified, maybe even unofficially, a skill that they didn't even realize they had. And I'm just wondering, one, what's it like to see that emerge in a sixth grader or a young student? And two, how do you broker that conversation to sort of maybe plant that proverbial seed in a world where there's no prescription for it as it might have been for you and I growing up.
Yeah, when I went to school, you sort of knew what the jobs that were going to be when you graduated. Like, you knew, like, okay, here's where I can go. And right now, these students that I have, when they graduate, half the jobs don't even exist right now. And so it's a little difficult to prepare them for a world that I don't know what it's going to look like. And so I think we really need to push in education, not necessarily what to think, but how to think. We need to practice those skills of critically thinking, analyzing things, looking at data, changing your mind when new data comes in, being able to work together as a team, being compassionate towards each other, wanting to learn, that love of learning. Like, that's the goal that I'm trying to teach my students right now, because we don't know what things are going to look like. And I want them to be prepared for whatever they want to do, whether it's the professional soccer player, which most of them right now are all convinced that they'll be the professional soccer players. But just in case that doesn't work out.
I thought that was only in Nashville here. I guess it's in Colorado too.
I love it. I usually tell my students, you know, your chances of being struck by lightning or high are better than for playing a professional sport. I'm not trying to, like, you know, you do you and I will support you, but maybe have a backup plan. But just, you know, I want them to think about it. And we're doing a lot of work around sustainability in my classroom. Right now we're talking about how our different, like today I just did a lesson on how different ways that we as humans are using our planet are affecting the wildlife and how their habitat loss and what that looks like. And again, I'm not telling them what to think. I'm just teaching them how to think. Like, look at this data and have a conversation. Read this article and let's have a conversation. And through that talking and through that conversation, students develop their own opinions. And, you know, I want them to continue to develop them. I want them to change them when new information comes up. You know, I want that ability to happen with the new evidence. There'll be new claims. And it's a fun time to teach, because in middle school, they're just developing their own opinions and their own thoughts and feelings. And so it's been fun to see how it works out.
Have you seen that, you know, with each sort of passing moment, the amount of information that young people are exposed to or have access to through a smartphone or a tablet is just exponential. Are you noticing the impact and sort of the questions that they're asking, the projects that they want to pursue? Has that changed over the last 15 years?
Yes, but probably not how you're wanting me to answer this question. It has changed. Students are struggling to ask questions. They don't know how to do it. They know how to ask questions such as, how do I do this? But I have to work a lot with my students to be like, it's okay to ask random questions. It's okay to wonder and be curious. But the way our education system is structured many times right now is it takes that wonder and that curiosity out. And so I spend a good part of the year just practicing asking questions. And they realize that they do ask questions. They just don't realize it, and that we have to kind of like tease that out.
Is that the Google effect, Autumn? Is that because they live in a world where, I mean, I'm trying to put myself back into that space, like, you know, 1988 or something. And if I'd had a question, but Google was around, would it have passed sort of the film strip in front of my mind that this might be a dumb question because I could potentially Google it? Like, why would I ask Ms. Rivera this question? Is that part of it? Or is it part of this lack of curiosity?
I don't know. It could be that. It could be because they could just like look it up right away.
Or ask Alexa or...
Yeah. I think, again, we have created a system where learning, I don't want this happening in every school, but in many schools where learning is only happening within the schools and it's not happening outside. And so for some of them, they think like, well, there's my question asking place that happens outside of school. It's not happening necessarily in school as much. And so trying to encourage that piece, I think that's very interesting when you bring up that point, because I'm not really sure, but I know that it's something that we do have to work on a lot. And I think learning how to ask the question, I think that's a thing. Like when we're Googling an answer, like they don't even sometimes know that skill of like how to word it. So a lot of times it's just like taking that question you have in your brain and being able to verbalize it so we can learn from that.
I was going to say, Autumn, what's scary about that? And maybe that's too hyperbolic to even use the word scary, but is, so when I've interviewed AI experts, right, and we think about a world where, broadly speaking, answers will sort of be provided, the key for us is going to be in inquiry and our ability to ask really great questions as part of a larger blueprint or schematic to whatever it is we're trying to solve, build, innovate, right? And so... Mm-hmm. if what I'm hearing you say is that when you get them, they struggle to be able to ask questions of quality in the beginning, that makes me, we talk about, you know, like, what's the goal of education? If we're going real deep,
yeah,
or broad, is, you know, how do we then prepare them for the jobs that, like to your point earlier, that are not even sort of in our conscience, like we haven't even conceived of them yet.
Yeah.
That's a huge chasm to, I guess, broker here, isn't it?
I totally agree with you. I think it can be very scary. Unfortunately, right now, many people's focus on education is not on, can we have students ask really good questions? It's, can we have students have really great test scores?
Yeah.
And you can't test how well you can ask a question. And so then it's not taught. And so really helping support teachers and trying to bridge that gap between, I need to get good test scores and I need to help my kids learn how to ask questions. It's a big gap sometimes.
So how long would you say, then we'll pivot off of this, though I'm fascinated with it, I hope the audience is as well, so then when you get students in the beginning of the year, is this now an active part of sort of your own lesson plan? And for how long are you focused on helping them reconfigure the relationship they have with just the art of asking a question?
Yeah, I start at the beginning of the year. You know, every unit I start with, we start with an anchoring phenomena, and then students ask questions about that phenomena. And using those questions, I base my lessons off of their questions. And so at the very beginning, the questions are very broad. They're very like, why is this red, or why is this happening? And it takes a couple learning cycles of like asking questions, having a unit, taking their question at the end and answering their own question for them to be like, okay, wait, I learned more than this. I can ask a better question than this. So I would say it takes half a year of that cycle for us to finally get to the point that now my driving question board has amazing questions where kids really are asking, why is this happening? What is this causing this, or is it something else? And so it's taking a lot of examples and encouragement and sort of letting them learn within themselves. Like, question asking is not something that you can necessarily teach formulaically. Like, you just have to continue to show them like, okay, that's that level. Like, let's see if you can go to this level. And the students are getting there and it's been impressive, but it definitely takes at least half of a year, if not more, to really get them to that point.
And I love, you said was a driving question board.
Yeah.
I love that. What is a driving question board? Is it something that they see in the classroom?
Yeah. It's something that happens a lot with our next generation science standards where you show an anchoring phenomena. And like, for example, we just learned about how orangutans are losing their population because of the palm oil factor growth and what that looks like. And so I just show them like, here's the cute orangutan. And then I'm like, your Halloween candy is killing them. Dun, dun, dun. And they're like, what is happening? And then they just ask tons of questions like, well, why is that happening? Is this happening because of this? And what about this? And what about this? And then we take all the questions and we put them up on like a board I have on the side of my classroom. And throughout the unit, I go back, okay, here's this question we're answering today. And we talk about that. And then we check it off when we're done with that. And here's this question we're looking at today. And it's a way for them to track their learning. And then at the very end of the unit, they come back to that and they take their sticky note off and I have them answer their sticky note to be like, okay, I took ownership over this learning and I asked this question and now I know this answer.
I love that. I think that would apply for adults in many, many environments as well. Let's pivot to the teaching profession.
Yeah.
I feel like we're at a bit of a crossroads in sort of the skills, the types, and not to say that there is a perfect or an ideal personality type, you know, when we're sort of looking to build the talent pipeline of the next generation of educators. But the world is changing greatly.
Yeah.
And I would think that you represent more of sort of of what we're looking for now and into the future, taking kids out into the field, like these sorts of things, right? The focused on the inquiry and the questions. Are you noticing a difference just in sort of the teacher base that you know largely when you go to you know, when we think about sort of the influx of new talent, are we seeing different types of educators entering into the system? Should we be concerned about, you know, I've always been concerned that we're not telling the best stories about the power of being an educator, and thus those that are in middle school and high school, are they really going to be sort of excited about entering into a professional experience in classroom as an adult? And sort of where are we on that sort of spectrum or that growth from your side of it?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question because I think we are kind of right at a fork in the road, and we can change the narrative around teaching and we can definitely celebrate teachers, and I want to do that. But it doesn't negate the fact that teaching is really hard right now. Teaching is really difficult. What's being asked of teachers is impossible. You can pay me double as much and I will not complain, but I still will only be a human who can only do so much. And I still will need time to go to the bathroom a couple times a day and maybe sit down and have lunch for 10 minutes. And I would love to not have to grade until 9 or 10 o'clock at night each night. And so really the profession and what's being asked of us has been really difficult. And so people are leaving and I don't blame them. And unfortunately or fortunately, I just love teaching too much. And so I'm just trying to make it work. But there are times where I even ask myself, like, can I keep doing this? Like, is this something that I can keep doing? Because it's so like the teaching when it's me in the classroom and that I love it. It's all of the extra pieces. And so I really think public education needs to triple the amount of adults we have in our schools so that we're able to divide up this load because it's just too much of an ask for a single human being to do. And the teaching force is very much changing. We're getting a lot of alternative licensure teachers, which is awesome. And I love it, but they are not trained the same way a traditional teacher is. And so it looks different. How it works is different. And so I do worry with our lack of teaching and people leaving the classroom and some people coming back, but not other people filling those positions, that many schools right now have empty positions that are being filled with part-time subs or being filled with people taking on extra planning or extra preps. And that's just too much to ask of a workforce who's already exhausted.
So before the bell rings, I had to say this on our interview, question. So in reading about you, You talk a lot about sort of your experience and enjoying sort of smaller, more personal environments and through your own learning journey. And that's why you chose where you went to college and just sort of different experiences along the way. Well, you know, that happens. And then you become recognized for your passion and professionalism and achievement with students. And that takes you out of sort of that proverbial sort of smaller classroom into a larger classroom as a backdrop in having voice and having agency and being someone that other educators look up to and are inspired by. I'm wondering how that has changed you or it maybe impacted you and just your DNA, because I can absolutely appreciate, because I was like you, I loved having relationships with my educators and my professors, and you know, life sort of takes different twists and turns. And sometimes we find that we become an ambassador, a representative, and we just can't get back into a small classroom because the page has turned. How has it impacted you?
That question I'm leading a whole session on with the 2021 Colorado Teacher of the Year at a conference this summer, because I think it is a very crucial and important question. Winning this war changed my life in ways I never even anticipated. Who I am 2 years ago and who I am now is very different, and not bad or good, just different. And I think moving forward, it is hard because I really pride myself in wanting to be the teacher that is still in the classroom, because the classroom has changed. Even 3 years ago, it's very different. And so if I want to be the advocate for education, I need to still be in the classroom. And so that's something that I'm really trying to do, but that's hard. That means I'm out of the classroom sometimes. And so what does that look like? And how did I bridge that gap? And I would love to stay in the classroom for as long as I can, but I do know at some point that might not be a possibility and that I need to continue to advocate at a different level. And that'll break my heart, but it just is what it is. And getting to share students' voices is my favorite thing. And I love being able to help students advocate for themselves. And so this award has allowed me to have a platform to do that and to keep going for it. So it's been really great.
Well, you have, there's obviously something about you and your passion. It comes through even in our discussion today. And those students are incredibly lucky. And I wish my kids had access to you, because we need more Autumn Riveras out there that are doing it for the right reasons, continuing to ask big questions and unafraid of the results, even if they reflect potentially negative on even our best of intentions. And I think that's just human. And I think that that's where we should probably leave this. But continued success. I'll continue to follow you. And I would encourage people, you can learn more. You can go search Autumn Rivera. She's got her own website. She's on social. She is sharing and advocating. And it's an important conversation to have. And you are a terribly talented individual. And thank goodness you are in education. Thanks so much, Autumn. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
This concludes another chapter of On Balance. Connect with me via LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Dr. Rod Berger.